Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each podcast will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the match day experience, while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football, or indeed any other spectator sport. Whether it's general advice you need or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about the Fan Experience Company, you can visit our new website at www.fanexperienceco.com. You can find out what we're up to at the moment, who we're working with, and you can read lots of blogs about our experiences to date. Today, we're going to be talking about one of the touch points on the matchday experience, and we're going to use that as a bit of a springboard to take us many thousand miles away to the Estonia-Russia border. But first, Darren, first impressions we've talked about. We've talked about the importance of helping people who are not used to coming to football matches find out information, but then getting them there is kind of the next point, isn't it?
It is, and I think from the work we do, this is one of the areas that's most underestimated by clubs, certainly.
Why do you say that?
Well, if you said obviously getting new fans to games is one of the most important, because if you haven't been before, then you need that information. But actually, I think what clubs also forget is that the restrictions around parking and transport and the options available change all the time. So even fans that may be semi-regular visitors to games suddenly might find that their usual match day journey has changed. And I think that clubs miss the opportunity to communicate this as well as they could.
I think you're right. And I think the clubs that do it well, and I know a couple of examples, Middlesbrough included, actually took a non-match day to get some of the people that work at the club to actually walk that journey, you know, so that they could approach the stadium from two or three different angles and just find out what it's like, you know, getting there on a match day. So I think you're absolutely right.
Think of a family, for example, if you think of all the things that they will be concerned about in the lead up to planning a game, transport and travel is by far and away one of their most critical considerations, because it's okay for, you know, if I went to a football ground, and I've done this several times, get to a football ground and think, oh, I thought I could park here, and suddenly realise that I have to park much further away. Well, if I've got to walk a mile and a half to the ground, that's fine. If I've got two kids, 6 and 4 year olds, that's a completely different matter.
Yeah, and as we've said before, this period now post-COVID is when football has to recognise that, you know, fan experience improvement is not just an option, it's absolutely vital. We've got to diversify our reach if we're going to survive. A lot of people are not going to have much money to spend, so we reckon that by addressing issues around travel, it's actually going to make a big difference for you.
Well, it's also the missed opportunities that are there to really just tell fans information that's readily available. So really, it's just pointing them in the right direction. So, for example, if you've got lots of parking at the stadium, tell people about it. Make sure you promote that, because it's a really good benefit that the club can use better. If you don't have parking, you can still be just as effective in saying to people, we haven't got the parking, but here are all the alternatives that are available.
Absolutely.
And also, just one example I just wanted to sort of throw in, and I got this from a visit and an assessment I did at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin for a Republic of Ireland game. And they actually, on their website, when I went on, I couldn't find a page that was dedicated to travel. What they actually did was just passed the transport and travel information link directly to the Aviva Stadium itself. And that was fantastic. It was one of the best examples of travel information I've ever seen. But the FAI didn't have to do it. What they actually did was said, look, here's where you go to get all this great information. So clubs could do that as well, and probably a lot miss the opportunity to use some of that information that's already out there.
No, you're absolutely right. So let's get to this week's podcast guest. One of the more interesting journeys I had to attend a game began with a taxi to Huddersfield Station, a train to Manchester Airport, a flight to Helsinki, another flight to Tallinn, and then a train to Narva on the Estonian-Russian border, where I met today's guest, Alex Dmitriev. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Mark. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, it's great to have you with us. Some of the people here will have already read an article I wrote for FC Business, which had the gut-wrenching title, Narva Ending Story. But that was talking about the story of Narva Trans, a club, as I say, right on the Estonian-Russian border, quite some distance from Tallinn, with a good footballing history, but a focus purely on winning. There was no fan experience, was there, when you first arrived as the CDO as part of the UEFA Grow campaign 2018, is that right?
Yeah, everything's right. Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, so what did you find when you first arrived at Narva? What was the fan experience like?
To be honest, it was almost nothing there. Mm-hmm. We can say it was nothing. And the average attendance on the home matches was around 100 fans. So you can imagine, so no one actually care about the fans.
Yeah. And Nick, and this is common, isn't it? In lots of parts of Europe where there's a small top tier and where perhaps the top 4 out of 10 or the top 4 out of 11 or 12 will get you a preliminary qualification round for the Europa League. You know, so you can see why clubs would want to make sure they finished fourth. But actually in a lot of these leagues, it's to the complete detriment of fans. There's nothing there, is there? There's no food, there's no entertainment, there's no pre-match experience, there's no fan zone. There was none of this there, was there?
Yeah, exactly. It was, I can say it was like empty stadium, only some fans arriving because some of their relatives playing there or something. So it was absolutely nothing.
But doesn't the town in that part of the world does have a strong football heritage, does it? Am I right in thinking Karpin came from that part of the world?
Yeah, exactly. Valery Karpin, I think lots of listeners should know this player. He used to play for Celta. Yeah. He used to be ex-captain of Russian national team. So yeah, he's from Narva, actually.
And so take us through the story. How did we get from June 2018, with I think the attendance around then was 60, not 16,000, 6,000 or 60,000, but 60 brave souls coming to see Narva play. Within 2 or 3 months, and during a period where the club lost 6 games in a row and sacked its manager, you ended up with 800 people at a game, albeit with the presence of the Estonian president. What did you do? Come on, tell us. How did you get from 60 to 800 in 3 months?
Okay, let me start from correct number. It was average attendance in the first part of the season was 106. So it's not
106, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the last match before the project starts, attendance in Narva was 85 or something like this.
Yeah.
So after 2 matches, when the project starts, after 2 matches, I should prepare some presentation in this 2 shots from the TV screen, like a business card for me, because you can see the difference, 80 people last match before project starts and then 800.
Yeah, that slide's gone viral around Europe, you know, when we've been doing presentations in different countries. On the one side, you see the same stand with a few people in it. On the second side, you see it full. And it's not as if that was 3 or 4 years later. It was just a couple of months later. So go on, pick up the story. What else did you do?
Yeah, how it started. The first thing we did is like better organization of inner club community. Because before the project starts, everything inside of the club was like separated. The youth team separated, women team, you know, the second team, they used to be like separated from the main team. So there were situations like, for example, when the main team playing in a Premium League match, the same time on the second field, sometimes there can be training sessions for the youth teams.
Yeah.
So we sit together with the club management, with the youth coaches. We discuss all this stuff. So let's start from the scratch. Let's organize the process that, you know, all this in the club community can be one thing.
Yeah.
So of course it's they said there was some kind of troubles before, but everything was dealt from the zero, and that's how we get, I think, according to my numbers, it's about 100 to 150 people each match.
Yeah.
So it was the first thing we do in the club community. So okay, that was the main start point for the club.
Alex, just one question, Alex.
Yeah.
You said obviously you started to make changes. How open to change were the owners and the people who were in charge of the decisions at the club?
You know, it's hard to say honestly, but I think because the project starts, it's the Grow for Premium Liga project. The first time community development officer, you know, the club was ready that something will change during the first maybe 4 weeks. Because we don't have cooperation before, we discussed lots of stuff. How we can do that? How we can do this? Should we do these things or maybe other? But later, for example, because I have some kind of experience in this like activities, because I used to organize some kind of events in the futsal local, I realized that maybe 90% of these questions I shouldn't ask from the management. We should do it.
Just do it.
And then we will discuss how it was. So I think maybe 1 month later, I realized that it will be better way. Because if you ask something, you need to get decision. Someone need to ask other person. Then other person need to ask someone else. And, you know, we're wasting the time.
It's easier to ask forgiveness than it is permission.
Exactly.
So a lot of what your early work, Alex, was in schools, wasn't it? You kind of persuaded the players, you persuaded the manager, and he's there now, isn't he, from Portugal, who became a good support for you. But tell us what you did in the schools around Narva.
We visited schools. Yeah, it was school visits. We decided to visit physical training lessons. So the idea we use there, we just bring fun and music and sport there.
Yeah.
So during physical training lessons, we bring our battery operated big speaker.
Yeah.
So every time plays music, I was some kind of DJ with the microphone, as always, you know.
Yeah. You always had a boombox with you every time we saw you, didn't you? That big, massive portable boombox that you could travel, take along to schools.
Exactly. Yeah. I have the microphone, so I can say some fun stuff. Maybe sometimes not so fun, but you know. So the kids simply like this. You know, it was some kind of new experience for them, because normally they just play, I don't know, basketball or soccer or something else, or they just run maybe 20 rings on the stadium.
Yeah.
But this time it was fun for them. It was some kind of competition, because we made four groups of the kids. They compared to each other. But at the same time, they just, they were doing, you know, some simple exercises with the ball, just run, sometimes not even with the legs, but with the arms.
Yeah.
At the same time, the music, fun music was playing. The music that kids know, actually, they like this music.
Yeah.
So at the same time, I asked them to dance. If you're not running with the ball, you should dance. The best dancer will get some kind of special prize for me, candy at the end of the lesson. You know, it was fun. Yeah. I was really amazed about this story. And of course, by the end of the lesson, we always ask, do you like this or not? Everybody was screaming, shouting, yeah, we like this. And then was simple question. If you like these guys from Narva Trans, from this club, they doing a great job today for you. If you like them, you're always welcome to visit the matches, especially this weekend. We will have a match against, for example, I don't know, FC Flora.
Yeah.
So you can get first time free invitation for this match. So please come to this match. Together with your class, you will have also a fun time there. You will have pictures later. We can discuss how it was. So, you know, it was some kind of new experience for all these kids, even the kids who visited matches before. Even they were amazed more because they were visiting this match together with their class. Lots of kids, they all screaming, shouting, you know, it's always fun.
It's an interesting thing that you're doing, because football does have a history across Europe of taking responsibility for children's cognitive development. You know, there are examples such as Frank Lampard's reading book for early readers, you know, football themed. And a lot of the work that clubs do and football does in schools is well-meaning, and it's aimed at helping the kid develop. But it doesn't have the end game of getting the kid to come to the match. And what you did, and correct me if I'm wrong, but each kid got a voucher, and then they presented the voucher at the game. So you then were able to understand what percentage of the children you met on the day in the school actually turned up on the day. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. This way.
Yeah. But you were getting things like 80%, weren't you? You were getting some huge responses from the kids. You know, not just 5 of them or 10 of them, but the majority of kids who were meeting you and the players were turning up at games.
Yeah, exactly. It was a huge number. The first numbers we get, I was also amazed. I don't remember, to be honest, it's almost 2 years gone, but it's something more than 60% of the kids were back to match.
Yeah.
It's huge number, even for me, because I have like big experience before. It's definitely one of the best things.
Well, it clearly changed. I mean, Darren and I have talked about your experiences a lot, you know, and you've obviously been telling your story right across Europe. But it was the pace of change as well. You know, this, we're not talking about something that took 12 months. You did this in a matter of weeks. And so tell us a bit more about what happened on the match day. How do you make sure that once the kids come, they want to keep coming back when you can't control the results of the football?
I need to remember all the stuff. But for example, of course, we organized this story that every time our team scored the goal, every kid on the stands get free candy. So everybody... Okay.
Free candy, did you say? Free candy?
Yeah, free candy. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So I just pushed this message before first match. I don't even realize how we will do it.
Yeah.
And when we scored the first goal, I just realized that I have troubles because I'm the only person with the candy, with the box of candies. But kids simply started to run near me. It was, I don't know, maybe 100 kids around. Everybody screaming, "Where is my candy?" So it was hard. But then we improved from match to match. For example, in the second year of this project, I already have like sections on the stands where I know like key persons. So when we scored the goal, I just gave them the packs of the candies, and they like share these candies with the kids on their part of the stands. So, you know, this we improved even in this.
Yeah.
The second thing, as you told before, it was the story that, as I told you before, we have nothing on the stadium. I just realized that on the first match, every fan just sitting and watching the match, no one screaming. I just realized that we need to do something to, you know, to start noise on the stands. I just started to be like, the, you know, some kind of DJ for the fans. I'm not playing music, of course, but I got a microphone with me, megaphone. And we started to cheer, you know. It's like school for the fans, because they never did that before. Actually, maybe, I don't know, 40 years ago or something. But they never did that before, so we started to teach how to do it. So let's scream, Narva, Narva, period, Narva trans. So everybody started to do this, and then from match to match, we're doing new stuff, we're doing it better. And on the second match, when we got 800 people, it was like interesting story. The two girls showed me that maybe we can do wave.
Mexican wave, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I just realized, okay, why not? Let's do it. We have 800 people there. There is no any other chances possibly this season to do this. Let me start. I just took the microphone. Are you ready to do a Mexican wave? Oh, we should do it now. Come on, Narva. Let's make a Mexican wave. Okay, let's do it. We start from this left turn, and then it goes, you know. Then it's everywhere in Premium League, social media, in clubs media. So
it is, and it's actually there for posterity, because we have a copy of that video, and you know, it's wonderful to see that. Darren, you and I talk a lot about what clubs are going to have to do after this pandemic, you know, and part of the thinking is almost like putting yourself in the starting again thing. Do you think clubs can learn from what Alex is doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Alex has just described just shows the power as well of putting some real thought into what you offer on a match day. Because if you think of the vast majority of clubs we come across, Mark, you see that they will go to schools, they will give tickets out, and that's pretty much it. And I remember one game where I did an assessment, and the club had given out tickets, a huge amount of tickets on the day, or for the day, and a lot, and you know, for the actual match itself, a lot of these kids did turn up, and the club had put no thought into what might happen if they did all turn up. So, for example, at half time, there was a queue, probably, you know, to the halfway line, literally, waiting for refreshments, because no one had thought beyond, well, let's just get them to the stadium. And I think this is some of the stuff Alex has said is just an example of what clubs could do going forward, where they put far more thought into this and think, well, how can we make that experience so much better when they're in the stadium?
And I think another area that he's, you know, that Alex, that you've done some brilliant stuff on, is showing smaller clubs that you can do things that bigger clubs can't do. And the best example for me was when you invited me to the game in September. This would be 2018 now. It was an evening match. And as I arrived, there was a table and it had the tickets on to be collected. And the ticket you gave me actually had a picture of me and Anna on holiday in Cuba on it. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Actually, that season we did like special design tickets. Actually, I did it myself because I got some skills in design. So for each match, we prepared 16 different designs of the tickets. So from the start, we decided that it will be not only pictures of the players on each ticket, but also the pictures of the fans. And for some special cases, when I knew something before, when, for example, like you, in case like you, I knew that you will arrive for this match. And I decided to, we decided in the club to do this ticket with special design for you. Yeah. So, because we just realized that you will be really amazed to see these tickets, and that will be the story you will always remember.
Yeah. You did one thing, Alex, and that was you made Anna's ears prick up, and when she saw that, she thought it was wonderful. You know, Anna's been with, you know, we founded the business together 15 years ago. We very famously visited 30-odd clubs in that first season, looking at the family experience through a new family's eyes. And there was very little that actually stood out as having direct appeal to families. And when I showed Anna that ticket, you know, she was really knocked back. And I guess that shows, you know, you're a small club, you can do things that bigger clubs can't. You know, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, far too big to ever attempt to do anything like that, other than digitally, of course. So I think that was a wonderful thing. So what did you learn in those first few months? What did you learn about the size of the challenge and what needed to be done to kind of make it part of the culture?
Lots of things, actually, we learn, especially me. Because even being such a skilled person in this, like, match experience in the futsal before, I just realized that I never bet on these school visits before we started this.
Yeah.
But when we started this, I just realized it's really, really huge thing. Because, you know, it's not only because of the attendance. It's also because when we started these school visits, next match, when the first kids arrived on the stadium, it was absolutely another atmosphere on the stands.
Yeah.
Before that, it was like hard to communicate with the fans. There was like, you know, we all like Scandinavian type of the people. like yeah. everybody just sitting, no one screaming. But as soon as kids arrives, atmosphere absolutely started to be amazing, you know. Yeah. It's fun. Everybody's cheer, everybody's happy. Kids arriving, that's the players we see on the schools. Come on, Iri, come on. Yeah. Oh, hello, Alex, do you remember our schools? You know, the atmosphere yeah. completely different.
Yeah.
And when we change this atmosphere on the stands, also the guest clubs who's coming to Narva, they started to talk about this. So it's now, we're happy to come to Narva to play these matches because atmosphere on the stands is great. Everybody like positive, high fives, pictures. So, you know, the even the like picture of the Narva changed in as we see from everywhere.
Well, that's what we talk about. You know, if you get the fan experience right, it doesn't just help you retain your existing fans, but it diversifies your reach. And I think, you know, especially where you are, it helps transform public perceptions of the game. And Darren has recently written a blog called Win When You're Singing. Darren, you wrote this about the impact of support on players' performance. And, you know, you're probably seeing a situation here where there wasn't anybody supporting the players. So Alex, how have the players reacted to the fact that they've got fans cheering them?
Of course, I talk with almost with every player in the club, and all of them were saying the same. Now it's, you know, it's easier to play for us. We are now ready to fight more because we see lots of people cheering. We cannot play like, you know, it's not like we cannot play bad, but you need to play as, you know, as strong as it possible. So that's changing also the perception of the players.
And I thought there was some clear evidence on, and we'll put the videos on the website, but I thought there was some clear evidence in some of the videos I saw of the work you did, Alex, that the players were playing with a smile on their face, and it just seemed to have that little lift in seeing the fans were so, you know, were behind them so much.
Yeah. On the first matches, we lost like six games in a row. And but when you, for example, when you check the pictures or the photo galleries from the matches, you never realize that, for example, our team lose this match. Because after the match, all the players came near the fans. We did high fives. Fans always was saying, don't worry, we're here with you. Next match we will win. So come on, and that also helps to players, you know, to recover from the losing the matches. So yeah. That's absolutely great things.
You know, it's remarkable what's been achieved in a short period of time. So, you know, I would urge anybody out there at any size of football club to check out what at JK Narva Trans, TRANS, comes from the transport business that the owner's in. Not only that, but they're playing now. On the 19th of May, just 2 days before we recorded this podcast, Estonian football began again without fans, but with a plan to get them into the stadium soon. And on the next few weeks, you'll be able to watch Estonian football live on TV.
Time for the roundup.
It's the roundup. And what I wanted to do this time was to find another example of a club in another part of the world who, like Alex's Narva, are effectively starting from scratch, and that is South Bend Lions. Yeah, there they are, southbendlions.com, a club in America that in one of the lower tiers of football there was founded just last May. And some of the things they're doing, particularly digitally, now that we're in the pandemic, are quite remarkable. What they're trying to do is to set up a club that has engagement written into its DNA. Some of the things they've done are designed to appeal to people's sense of humour. There's a chief happiness officer at the club, for example. But they're also looking to build loyalty around the original fan group. So those fans that attended the meetings that were put together to start the club, they were given a yellow scarf. Now, no one else can get that yellow scarf. So if you're wandering around the town and you're wearing that scarf, people know that you were one of the fans at the start. Might even be a blue scarf. I might have got that wrong. But certainly it's a scarf that no one else can get. So look at Narva. Also have a look at southbendlions.com, and also look back at some of the work that Seattle Sounders did. You know, what they did was they really let fans start the club by, for example, having a brass band of fans in the middle of town that would walk out an hour and a half so before the game, creating a bit of noise, creating interest, leading to more and more people being interested in the club. And that club then went on to achieve record attendances in the MLS.
Just one thing, Mark, on that South Bend Lions as well. The fans actually designed the kit, home and away kit, but all of the season ticket holders who bought a season ticket for their first season, all of their names are on that kit as well. Yeah, so fantastic, just nice little touches that just make such a difference for fans.
It is, and one thing that you've certainly done, Alex, you've made a massive difference at Narva. Has it made a difference to the way you run your own business? You run an online and offline furniture business, don't you? Has it the work at Narva inspired anything that you do differently in your work?
Actually, yes. And of course, this time, for example, when I'm working in this furniture store, almost half of the people entering the store I know already, because we got lots of people on the stands, almost everyone saying hello Alex, how are you doing, and almost all of them asking also questions about football. So it's now more like integrated, my business more integrated with the football now.
Well, that's fantastic. Listen, thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast today. I want to thank you, Darren, for joining us. I want to thank our producer. Thanks to all of you. Please listen in. Check out the website at www.fanexperienceco.com. And we'll see you next time on the Fan Experience Experience podcast series.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience Experience was recorded live. See you next time.